This is WJBC This Week.
The more people, you know, we preach tolerance to, you know, the better the world will be.
Quite frankly, I've not heard a single person, not just in Ward 6, but across the community, say to me, what a great idea.
This is a concept. This really wasn't even a proposal yet.
This is the public's money. It's not the Board of Health's money.
Right now, these are ongoing investigations, but I will tell you that at this time, they are not related.
Ecstatic. I am thrilled.
Welcome to WJBC This Week, where we look back at the top stories and interviews from the past week. I'm Eric Stock. On this week's program, a leader in the local LGBT community calls for dialogue and an end to hate following the mass killing at a Florida nightclub. The Bloomington police address a recent rash of shootings. A McLean County board member slams a county health board for what he calls dysfunction, disrespect, and wasting taxpayer dollars. A local woman rubs elbows with the likes of President Obama and Oprah in attending a first-of-its-kind summit for women. Plus, a local baseball standout weighs his options after he gets selected in the Major League Draft after giving a commitment to Illinois State University. That and more coming up. This is WJBC This Week. Welcome back to WJBC This Week. The massacre at a gay nightclub in Orlando last weekend marked the worst mass shooting in U.S. history. It was especially troubling for the LGBT community, which quickly organized rallies and prayer vigils across the country, including one in Bloomington on Monday night. Hundreds took part in the walk from the Bistro nightclub downtown to Withers Park. One of the organizers is Dave Bentlin, president of the Prairie Pride Coalition. He talked with WJBC's Terry James this week.
I'm curious, when you woke up on Sunday morning, or I guess when did you first hear about it, and what were your thoughts?
Well, I actually had got a text message from a good friend who asked me if I'd heard about it. At that point, I got on my computer and started looking up some information, and this was pretty early on in the time frame, and they were only reporting that it happened at a nightclub in Orlando. They were not reporting that it was an LGBT club. So at that point, I was not fully aware of the situation. But then, as the hours went on and the toll of lost lives increased, more information was being shared, and it was just a devastating few hours that it's been for many of us in the LGBTQ community. Hard to imagine, hard to get your arms around it.
When I heard about it, I don't know how to explain it. It was kind of like, here we go again. We're going to have a debate for 6 days and then everyone's going to forget about it. And we just can't. We can't forget about what happened on Sunday morning.
Right. I think, yes, I agree with you completely. We'll talk about this for a few days, but if the talk ends after a few days, then that gunman will have succeeded in what he wanted to do. We cannot allow ourselves to be silenced on these issues. You know, we're talking about, sensible gun regulation laws. We're talking about increased services for people who are mentally ill so that we can avoid these types of situations, because this is a dark day, not only for LGBTQ community, but for our nation. There's just no other way around it. And there has to be sensible action taken to at least address a lot of what happened in this situation. It's time.
You know, one of my first thoughts, though, was I guess at first I didn't like that they were saying it was a gay club, because when they were talking about first 20 dead and then 50 dead, and I thought, let's stop making this political right now. Let's talk about human beings died, and that's not okay, especially inside the United States of America.
Right. I agree with you, and that death in any number, in any place like this, any situation like this, is so unfortunate and tragic and senseless. For me, the LGBTQ aspect of it took on a deeper significance and a deeper meaning when I began to read reports about how the gunman had expressly made known his feelings about gay people. You know, how he was extremely angered at the sight of two men kissing. You know, that he harbored these feelings that I think in some part motivated him to do what he did that night. So I think, you know, in many respects, the LGBTQ aspect is one that needs to be brought up, because there are still areas of this country where we do not feel safe. And I think that this is a very unfortunate example of what can happen when there is hatred out there, when there is bigotry and misunderstanding about a class of people. And so you know, a tragedy like this is a tragedy no matter who the victims are. But in this case, the fact that it was an LGBTQ related hate crime, in my mind, is significant and needs to be brought up.
That was Dave Bentlin of the Prairie Pride Coalition with Terry James. Meanwhile, the father of the gunman who attacked a gay Orlando nightclub says his son was not gay. A U.S. official briefed on the case this week said the FBI is investigating reports that Omar Mateen had been a regular with the nightclub and had used gay dating apps. Investigators are looking into possible motives for the attack and have said that Mateen appears to be a homegrown extremist who touted support not just for the Islamic State, but other radical groups that are its enemies. The shooting in which a teenager was wounded late Thursday was the fifth incident of gunfire in the city of Bloomington in the last 3 weeks. Three people in all have been injured, and arrests were made in only one of the incidents. Prior to the most recent shooting, Bloomington Police Chief Brendan Heffner talked about it with WJBC's Susan Saunders this week.
What do we know about these shootings, and how can we put a stop to it?
Well, first of all, we have no information that these shootings are related. So I can't tell you that they are gang-related, okay? So I want to be clear with that so people don't think we're having issues there, not that we can't. So secondly, there have been two people wounded. We've had four shootings recently within the last couple months. But I could not tell you why. If we knew that, that would help us out a lot. The investigations are ongoing. We look for the public's assistance. If they have any information, Officer Mayor spoke earlier, they can call Crime Stoppers. They can call us direct to assist us. But right now, these are ongoing investigations, but I will tell you that at this time, they are not related.
And do we have the culture of a community that will give information when a crime like this is being investigated, or is everybody being very tight-lipped for fear of being labeled a snitch?
Well, with a couple of these, it occurred at a time of night where there weren't many witnesses. And I'm sure your second point there in regards to being labeled, I hate snitch, maybe someone who does the right thing and passes along information to solve a crime, sometimes they are concerned about coming forward with that information. That's why we always reiterate they can do it anonymously. But
do we have a problem in places in this community where people won't come forward even though they have information?
There are those issues at times, yes. You are correct.
And we're trying to fight them in what ways? In
well,
what
that,
way can
that
we
comes back to, as we were talking earlier, with officers on bikes, the officers on patrol, us trying to reach out and just talk to people beyond the times that these incidents occur. Because the better relationships we have, the better trust factor we have, it helps us gather information when these incidents occur. But you know, also sometimes some people don't know things, but I will tell you we do have people who monitor social media and send that information in, or sometimes in the following weeks we get information because people may not know things at that time, but they hear something that they pass along to our investigators. So we are actively working them.
Never be ashamed to report a rumor, because you never know when enough rumors turn into be fact. And that's what you can use the non-emergency number for, or if you can't find that, call 911 and ask what the non-emergency number is.
Yes, that's a very good point, because a lot of times if you think about a jigsaw puzzle, we are trying to put things together. You may have that piece that completes the puzzle for us.
That was Bloomington Police Chief Brendan Hefner with Susan Saunders. A McLean County woman was in the nation's capital this week, taking part in the White House's first ever United State of Women Summit. Kim Wells, executive director of the Bloomington-based Corporate Alliance to End Partner Violence, talked about it with WJBC's Dan Swaney this week.
Oh, my goodness. I hung out with about 5,000 amazing men and women from all across the United States and around the world, including the vice president, the president, the first lady, Oprah, Amy Poehler, Mariska Hargitay, Connie Britton,
Kerry Washington and Shonda Rhimes.
Billie Jean King, Sophia Bush. The list of amazing people goes on and on.
It was the summit, as they say. It was the United State of Women Summit. And this is a big deal, held by the White House, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Yes, it was held by the White House. It was the first ever White House summit on the United State of Women. And it was held actually by the White House Council on Women and Girls. So this was the first time this has ever been done. And it was really to sort of celebrate the progress that has been made and then to sort of turn the focus towards the future. You know, what's been done, what needs to be done, and what can things look like for the future. I got to tell you that some of the greatest parts of the day were these amazing 11, 12, 13-year-old young girls that were part of the day that do incredible work and advocacy that blew me away. I mean, they just blew me away.
You know, Kim, I looked at some of the video from there yesterday, and I had exactly the same response that you did. The kids make you feel good for the future, don't they?
The kids make me feel amazed for the future. And they're so self-aware, and they're so self-possessed. You know, the young lady who has the lemonade project to save the bees, I've thought a lot about, you know, gosh, I'm worried about the bees, but I've never thought about having a lemonade project to save the bees. Or the Thousand Black Girls book project. These young women are just amazing. And the young woman who introduced the president, oh, my God.
She was incredible.
I mean,
she
made you cry.
Oh, yeah. She was absolutely, she may have been the highlight of the whole day because she was just so passionate about what she did. Yeah.
I would have a hard time picking a highlight of the day. I will tell you that everybody, we went long because the vice president went long, but that was great because he was wonderful. But everybody was waiting for the first lady and Oprah and their conversation, and that was about 2 hours past when it was supposed to be. But I got to tell you, Dan, it was worth it. Their conversation was great, and their interaction was great, and what they had to say about women and being in the White House and being the first lady and defining yourself and what success means and what it means for girls in the future and what that should look like was a great conversation.
What was the best takeaway from that conversation? Because I had a feeling that that was going to be the main star attraction of the whole day yesterday. What was your takeaway from that?
It was funny.
Yeah.
it was funny. But I would say they talked about, you really have to know yourself. You know, you can't know what you're supposed to do in life, and you can't know where you're supposed to be in life if you don't know yourself and like yourself. And that really guides your steps. You can't, as you can imagine, those are two people that get picked apart constantly by the rest of the world, and you can't listen to that. And then they just talked about the importance of, you know, your life doesn't really much matter if you aren't spending it making a difference for other people. But that comes first from knowing yourself, because you can't really give that away until you know yourself. So I thought that was great. And then when they just sort of asked men to just be better, the way that they did it very humorously with the men in the room was also really great.
We're talking to Kim Wells. She's the executive director at Corporate Alliance to End Partner Violence. She was part of, not just there as a spectator, but part of the United State of Women's Summit. in Washington, D.C. yesterday. About 5,000 people, they estimated, were there. You were also part of one of the breakout groups, weren't you? So you had an active role of being, you know, on the docket, so to speak.
Yeah, I was presenting on domestic violence and violence against women and a presentation called Changing the Culture to End Violence Against Women in a Solutions Seminar, talking about corporate America and how corporate America can change the culture in ending violence against women in domestic violence and sexual assault. So I was super honored, as you can imagine, when the White House emailed me and said, hey, do you want to come and do this? You know, you don't say no.
I guess not.
Say, oh, my gosh. And you say, of course, I'll come. And of course, I'll do that.
That was going to be the next thing that I was going to ask you about is how did the invitation come? And you said it just came by email. I would have thought it.
They always do. Every invitation I have ever gotten from the White House has been by email.
That would.
And I know the email address. It's like when it comes from like FN-EVOP-whatever. Something like that. I'm like, I know I need to pay big time attention to that email because it means it's coming from like the Vice President's office or from the White House.
Yeah. Well, you were there with 5,000 other folks. A lot of them, as we say, were celebrities, which we're going to talk about that here in just a second. But if you get a chance, when you got a chance to kind of mingle with everybody there, what's the topic most people are talking about right now across the country?
Orlando. I mean, that's what everybody was talking about. It could not be on our minds. I mean, everybody there, it was ridiculous in a way for me to be presenting to people who were experts in the field. You know, I'm talking to people who know so much more than me. I was so honored to be there because these are the experts from across the country and around the world that were there yesterday. And so much of what we talked about was, you know, violence and because we talk about violence against women and violence against people, and you couldn't not talk about Orlando, and you couldn't not mourn for people, and you couldn't not talk about how all of this is intertwined. You know, as I think you know from the news, there's indications that the shooter was violent with his first wife.
Mm-hmm.
And all of those things are intertwined. And so that was heavy on everyone's minds and hearts yesterday.
Kim, you were in a room that had a lot of celebrities. Like you said, when they had the speakers, the big time speakers that were there. And we're talking, yeah, we're talking big time. We're talking everybody from, well, let's say Connie Britton spoke, Kerry Washington, Amy Poehler, the vice president, who I thought just hit a home run. He is so passionate.
Oh, he always does. He's
yeah.
So
well, he actually had something to talk about there, and his passion. You're sitting in the audience, and you're sitting there watching all these people go by. Does it make you feel good? Does it make you feel a little more secure that so many high-profile people are into the same thing that you're into?
It does. I think it lends credence to the fact that these issues matter to people who can give a voice to people who don't have a voice. One of the things the vice president said, and I don't know if this came out in the media or not, was that they had a picnic for the folks that work for the White House just the day before, and seven of their staff people in the line when the president and he go and greet people had pulled the vice president aside and said, I want you to know that I've been a victim of sexual assault. Seven of their employees had pulled him aside and told him that just in the line yesterday, the day before. And he just wanted to bring that point to us to say, this is just, in our employee group talking to us, me, at the picnic yesterday, this is all around us. We have to wake up. We have to know that this is true in our community. This is true in our workplace. This is true in our lives. And we have to stand up and make a difference about this. And that was just one example that he gave from the heart because he is so passionate about this issue.
That was Kim Wells of the Corporate Alliance to End Partner Violence with Dan Swaney. Today's local news is next. This is WJBC This Week. Welcome back to WJBC This Week. McLean County Board Member Carlo Robustelli of Bloomington is calling for the removal of any County Board of Health member found to have violated the state's Open Meetings Act in connection with the handling of the department's budget. As the Illinois Attorney General announced this week, it was investigating the Board of Health at the request of McLean County State's Attorney Jason Chambers. Robustelli talked with WJBC's Terry James this week.
The Board of Health acts as the governance body on behalf of the McLean County Board. Our role is to appropriate levies and funds that help the health department function and provide vital health services, and also to appoint members to the board that oversee the operation. They provide leadership. And what's happened is, as a result of reporting this last weekend, the state's attorney's office has requested that the attorney general look into the potential for Open Meetings Act violations. And I'm not in a position to comment on whether or not they acted unlawfully or whether or not they their actions are prosecutable or criminal. But I will say it is an utter failure of leadership, in my opinion.
We have money in McLean County that is there in case of a health emergency. Do you believe there are meetings that have taken place discussing how that money should be used that should have been open to the public?
I do. In my assessment, based on what I have reviewed in terms of the contacts between members of what was called the executive committee, they have since had to dissolve that by email in private, not publicly noticed meetings. There were conversations about strategies and different things, ways in which they could circumvent transparency in government. And I think it's important that we have what I think most people would agree is a reserve in case we have a public health crisis. The question I think members of the county board and public have asked is, give us the rationale, and in the face of the state budget disaster, for a lack of a better term, what's plan B? What do we do if the state continues to not fund the health department, or if they do fund it, but they fund it at 30% or 60%? Come up with some scenarios. Let us know what the plan is. I think those are reasonable requests, and it's been very difficult to get that information.
In your understanding, what have some members of the Board of Health wanted to do with this money reserved for an emergency?
Well, I mean, obviously, some of the justification has been, well, we need to have a certain level of reserve on hand, which I agree with in principle, for in case there is a public health outbreak of some kind. And I think that's critically important. The rationale, which has sort of evolved, as we have seen, which nobody could have anticipated, the failure of the state to pass a budget is, well, hey, look, see, when we appropriated a budget, we had expected the state would come through with their contracts. They haven't come through the way they had. See, this is why a reserve is important. And I think McLean County has having a reserve policy, which we do. The county board has we just amended our reserve policy as a result of this uncertainty. We've increased what we say is a reasonable reserve percentage from 10 to 15%. But in the health department's case, what I think has been challenging for some of us is the level of the reserve. And so, you know, several months ago, we're going on 3 months ago, and so these numbers may be a little old, the county auditor presented a spreadsheet that showed an average over the last 3 years of all the funds and the reserve balance. It was over $5 million. So to put that in context for your listeners, that's over 60% of a reserve. And I think for a lot of people, they ask some reasonable questions, which is, why aren't we appropriating some of that funding to deal with our public health issues? And why is it that we need that high level of a reserve? And I think that's the conversation that I think we're going to need to have moving forward.
However, the reason why you are concerned is because you're not against having these conversations. You just feel that they were not held in a way that the public would have input in that decision.
That's exactly right. I think that there is I think the investigative reporting that was done by the Pantograph really details a pattern of behavior that concerns me. It's a way in which they have conducted business. And I think in light of how important it is now more than ever for us to have confidence in government, I think we need to be thinking more about how we can be more open and more transparent in the way that we conduct business. And it's really because I believe in the services and the programs at the health department. They're really important. And I think we only have something to gain when we open the doors, where we let people in, where we gauge and collaborate, because that's the new norm in this economic climate. Collaboration and coordination. We've seen it with the work that we've done over the last 3 to 5 years on really pushing the envelope and providing better mental health care for our community. We have a setback, obviously, because the partner that we had anticipated would at the very least pass a budget didn't do that, and that's the state of Illinois. But we're moving the ball forward. And so now what we need to see, and I'm very hopeful, the new leadership on the Board of Health, Sonia Reese and Judy Buchanan. Sonia will be the vice president. Judy will be the president. I'm very confident in their leadership. But in the interim, I really hope that those members of the Board of Health that were involved, that are named in the state's attorney's letter to the attorney general, I hope that they will see that their continuing service is really going to hurt the reputation of the county. And I hope that they step down from their position. And if they don't, I've asked that the county board chairman look into whether or not he has the authority and the ability to remove them from their office.
Besides the fact that we have an Open Meetings Act, how is it dangerous that, and is it dangerous for conversations about public health money to be kept private?
Well, I mean, that's an important question. I think it's dangerous in a couple ways. I don't know that dangerous is the word I would use to characterize it necessarily. I just don't think it's appropriate. This is the public's money. It's not the Board of Health's money. It's not the McLean County Board's money. It's not the director of the health department's money. It's taxpayer money. And we need to be as taxpayer-oriented as possible. And the way that you do that is you conduct business out in the open so that when citizens have questions or they are staying engaged in your decision-making process, they understand how the taxes they pay are being used to serve the programs and services you provide. I think that's just good government. If you don't behave in that way, you run the risk of losing the confidence of taxpayers, and then it becomes really hard to ask them to make an investment in the programs and services you provide. And that's really the shame here. Our health department is really, really good. We have some amazing professionals that are doing incredible work. They're making a big difference. We are a model not only in Illinois but in the country around the work we've done to pull people together to reform our mental health care system. We're expanding the county jail be able to more appropriately treat those that come into the jail with mental health issues. But we're also taking the steps to look out in the community and figure out how we can avoid people from coming to jail. These are examples of collaboration and coordination that I think model the kind of open and transparent government that I think really works better.
In the past, McLean County has had a West Nile virus outbreak. We have had a mumps outbreak across the community. Zika is on the radar. We are 2 hours from an international airport. Are those the types of issues that cross your mind?
Sure. I mean, there are a lot of – I mean, we have a whole division within the health department that looks at preventing these kinds of outbreaks. They are monitoring them. They have partnerships with the hospitals. They have partnerships with the CDC. So, yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, when we have to be in a position and ready to the best of our ability to react. And the way we do that is with really – people. We have the right people in place that have the right connections. Depending on the level of outbreak, you know, depends on and depending on the particular disease or issue, we're going to get the support and coordination from the state and federal government. And I think that's another important point for me to point out, which is that the health department doesn't operate in a bubble. If there is a true health emergency in this community, it's all hands on deck. We're going to do everything we can to care for the residents. And so, you know, to make the argument that they need to have a fund balance reserve in their area that is so great that it could address every single possible scenario, I just think that's unreasonable. I don't think anybody – there always could be some epidemic or something that is so bad that we're going to have to, you know, county board is going to have to, along with the administration, think about the general fund. We're going to have to go to the state, the feds. Those kinds of issues are so big that it's unreasonable to just bank money from taxpayers to just sit there with the hope that we're going to address that. So I think there's a reasonable line there, and I think we just need to continue to have that conversation. But what was disturbing to me was the picture that was painted this past weekend of some things and some actions that were taken that didn't allow that to come forward in an open and transparent way, in my assessment.
That was McLean County Board of Member Carlo Robustelli with Terry James. It was a dream come true for a Central Catholic saint. John Rabe was selected in the Major League Baseball draft, taken in the 35th round by the Boston Red Sox, though he is already committed to playing baseball at Illinois State. So what now? Rabe talked with WJBC this week.
John Rabe, where were you when you heard the news that you had been drafted in the Major League draft by the Boston Red Sox?
I was actually just hanging out at a buddy's house. You know, we were playing video games, FIFA, and a little bit of NBA 2K, but I was really just hanging out. I knew the draft was obviously going on, but I wasn't trying to look too much into it. I was just trying to have a normal day, relax a little bit, and not let that consume my whole day.
Well, of course, the draft goes on for a number of days, and that could be kind of crippling to just be constantly worrying about it.
Exactly. I mean, after the first 2 days, I wasn't really expecting a whole lot after the first 2 days, but I obviously watched the first 2 rounds on TV because I had some buddies that ended up going. Gavin Lux went 20th, and then Ben Rovette obviously went 56th to the Twins. But after that, I really just didn't tone in too much to it. But every time that people would be, "Oh, are you watching the draft?" I'd be like, "No, I'm just trying to hang out a little bit with my friends and have a good day."
So how does the call come in then?
Actually, I received a call from the area scout that was for Boston, that was at a lot of my games this year, and he called me and he said, I was on the phone when it actually happened. He had already called me before the pick was even in, so he called me and he's like, "How does it feel to be selected by the Boston Red Sox?" And it's a surreal feeling because, I mean, that's every high school kid's dream, is to hear their name called in the draft. I mean, and every baseball player's dream, so... Yeah, it was a great feeling, honestly.
Did you have a sense that the Red Sox were interested, or were there other teams that had expressed interest?
Oh yeah, I knew the Red Sox were interested, but there were definitely some other teams that showed interest, but the Red Sox were definitely at the top of that list.
So what happens now? You've committed to Illinois State, and I guess there's a process that you've got to work through in your own mind, whether you sign, whether you wait.
I mean, right now it's just a waiting game. I think unless something crazy happens with another Red Sox signee, I think I'll be at Illinois State for at least 3 years, maybe four. But hopefully after getting bigger, better, stronger at Illinois State, then I'll be back on the board in a couple years.
So what all figures into that calculus there if the Red Sox make a certain kind of financial offer or a certain kind of they can't give you a guarantee. Of course, they just drafted you out of high school. But what all are you using to determine your next plan?
Well, I mean, you gotta weigh in a lot of things. I mean, what's it going to take to not go to college and have that college experience? And I'm very happy with my commitment to Illinois State, and I'm very thankful to the Boston organization for drafting me, but it's just not the deal that I guess I was obviously looking forward to forego going to Illinois State. But I'm still very, very grateful for the selection, and unless something crazy happens, I'll be here in town at ISU, and I'm greatly looking forward to it.
So going in the 36th round, how do you figure perhaps in 3 to 4 years, how much more might your stock be able to rise?
I think the sky's the limit. I mean, I'd bet on myself 10 times out of 10. I mean, I think I could make my stock go up just as much as anyone. So I'm going to work my butt off at Illinois State, and hopefully in a couple of years, or a few years, hear my name called again.
Of course, there are a number of Redbirds that have taken that opportunity and have done well.
Yeah. I mean, obviously Paul DeJong, who got drafted last year, 2 years ago, whatever it was, and he's skyrocketing up the Cardinals organization. He's having a great year. I mean, they just keep sending people to the draft, which is a great sign for the organization. I mean, it's a process, but I think with this group of guys coming in and the group of guys that are already there, we'll have a great few seasons together.
So the dream, of course, is to make it to the major leagues. So do you feel that you moved a step closer then?
I definitely feel that. I mean, just being able to say that I was drafted out of high school is a huge thing. I mean, very fortunate, but I'm going to be a college player now, and I think that I can reach my dream because I'm a baseball player. I'm still a kid just playing the game, and I mean, it's obviously my dream to make it on the big stage one day, and I'd bet on myself to do that.
And how might that change your approach at Illinois State, playing with that sort of on the horizon, hopefully a career beyond your college days?
I try not to think too much about that. I mean, it's just a game, you know. Obviously, I want to do it for a job one day, but games are supposed to be fun, and if I ever get the opportunity, another opportunity to play a game as my career and get a sustainable amount to do it, I think that's just amazing.
That was Central Catholic Saint, Illinois State recruit, and Boston Red Sox draftee John Rave on WJBC This Week. The Weekend News is next. This is WJBC This Week. Welcome back to WJBC This Week. Time now for the Weekend News. Hate will not be tolerated. That was the message from hundreds of members of the Bloomington Normal LGBT community and their straight allies brought to the streets of downtown Bloomington on Monday night. It was in response to the shootings in Orlando, Florida, at a gay nightclub in which nearly 50 people were killed. Krista Ortiz of Bloomington carried a large rainbow flag from the Bistro nightclub to Withers Park.
Well, I think this shows that we are united. I think this is just a great turnout. That was, I guess, produced within 24 hours. We're with them. We feel their pain. We're here to show them that we are one. We're united. And that fear will not win.
Rain started falling in downtown before the march to Withers Park. Then a rainbow covered the sky as men, women, and children said no to violence against any human being. Sharing sales tax revenue between Bloomington and Normal won't be discussed anymore in Bloomington. WJBC's Adam Stasinski reported the majority of city council members decided they're not interested in pursuing the thought further.
Alderman Karen Schmidt was one of several who didn't see a problem the idea would address.
Quite frankly, I've not heard a single person, not just in Ward 6, but across the community, say to me, what a great idea for Bloomington to do this.
Normal City Manager Mark Peterson tells WJBC's Dan Swaney, if Bloomington won't look into the idea more, then it's doubtful they will in Normal. Adam Stasinski, WJBC and WJBC.com.
The Extending Excellence Capital Campaign by the McLean County Museum of History brought in $3.36 million, more than its original goal of $3 million. Campaign co-chair Carolyn Yockey says she's thrilled by the campaign's success.
I had a feeling that we would do well. I did not expect to do as well as easily as we did.
Museum Director Beth Wissman says the funding will be used for a variety of museum improvements, which will include a new permanent exhibit. The museum made the announcement during its annual History Makers Gala, which honored Jill Hutchinson, Jack Porter, Gordon Ropp, and Father Rick Schneider. One year after retiring from the CEO post that he held for 30 years at State Farm, Ed Rust has now relinquished the chairman of the board post for the insurance giant. This week, the State Farm Mutual Board of Directors unanimously elected CEO Michael Tipsord to the chairman of the board post. Tipsord replaced Rust as CEO last September. The 65-year-old Rust began his State Farm career in 1975 and is the company's longest-serving CEO and chairman. Tipsord has been with the State Farm since 1988. A McLean County board member for 16 years is giving up his seat months before he would have to exit after losing an election. Benjamin Owens, a Republican who has served as chairman of the board's finance committee and who has represented District 10 on Bloomington's east side, turned in his resignation to the county board's executive committee this week. The resignation takes effect June 30th. The county board has already filled three vacancies on the board this year. Now it will have a fourth. Alan Beeman, who was wrongfully convicted for the murder of an Illinois State University student, could find out this week whether his lawsuit against three retired police officers in Normal will be allowed to proceed. A Douglas County judge said he'll rule this week on a request by the defense to have the case dismissed. Beeman served 13 years in prison before the Illinois Supreme Court tossed out his conviction for the killing of Jennifer Lockmiller in 1993. Beeman is seeking $50,000 in damages from the town and the retired police officers. The Salvation Army of McLean County is recruiting fans, the ones that relieve the summer heat. The annual fan drive is accepting monetary donations and new and gently used fans to distribute next month, according to the Salvation Army's Angie Fulton.
Box fans aren't that expensive either, but you know, when you're struggling to put food on the table, any little help that you can get is gonna be a big help. So getting a box fan for free does make a difference. So if you have the capacity to go buy one and donate to us, please consider doing that.
Donations are accepted weekdays 9 to 4 at the Core Community Center on West Washington Street in Bloomington. The first fans will be distributed to seniors and those with documented medical needs starting July 11th. There's more information at sibloomington.org. Up next, the week to come. This is WJBC This Week. Welcome back to WJBC This Week. Now we take a look ahead at the week to come. On Monday, Bloomington's City Council will hold a work session on proposed fees for establishments that host video gambling. Congressman Adam Kinzinger, a McLean County native, comes back to his hometown to speak at the McLean County Republican Party monthly breakfast. On Tuesday, there will be a groundbreaking for the new Radisson Hotel in Normal. On Tuesday night, the Heartland Community College Board will consider a tentative annual budget. Also Tuesday night, the Bloomington Normal Sports Commission will name its High School Athletes of the Year at its annual banquet, which will include featured guest, former U-High soccer standout Ashley Pistorius-Slayback. Tuesday is also the first full day of summer. And on Thursday, former McLean County Board Chairman Matt Sorensen's federal court case has a scheduled hearing in Chicago. Sorensen awaits trial on fraud charges related to what prosecutors say was tied to his work as a private consultant. This has been WJBC This Week. To listen to this week's program again, go to the WJBC.com podcast page. I'm Eric Starr.